At the beginning of the global pandemic, pianist Andrew Van Ooyen really didn't know what to do. He wasn't even sure if he should practice. All of his concerts were off the calendar. Why should he be practicing concertos when performances were being canceled left and right? He was looking for something else, something that would really offer healing during this troubled time. That's when he rediscovered the music of Bach. And he put together a new recording that was filled with music of Bach and Beethoven. You're going to find out more about his adventure and the silver lining he discovered during the pandemic. It became this new recording, which is the subject of this week's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. Well, let's start off, Andrew, by just telling me how you're doing. How are you doing now that we're kind of feeling like we're maybe on the other side of at least the worst of the pandemic?
You know, I'm in Paris right now, and today is a rather joyous day in the city because today is the first day we can be outside without masks. So I know we're a bit behind you guys on the other side of the pond, but it's the weather here is beautiful. It's almost too warm. It's kind of a quasi heat wave. But you know what? The terraces are open. People are in a good mood. Days are long. There's certainly more optimism everywhere. And so we're just trying to ride that wave of optimism. I mean, of course, nobody knows what's to come, but all of us musicians are just so thrilled that live performances are actually happening again.
What's most important to you right now?
For me, what's most important is the ability to do what I love to do, which is to play concerts. And I know that this whole last year was difficult for so many people and in so many industries, but for performers, it was a killer. It was really, really hard to stay home and not be able to share our art with our friends, with our fans, with everybody. And so I think for me, the most important thing is really that I get to make music in a live setting. And, you know, traveling, okay, that's nice. You know, but honestly, it's if I had to just stay put somewhere and just, but I was able to perform in that city, I would be very happy.
You have a home in Los Angeles and in Paris, is that correct?
Correct.
Have you been in Paris most of the time during the pandemic? Because that's where you did record this recital recording.
Yeah, I think I spent sort of half of the time here and the other half in California. I tried to sort of plan that strategically with lockdowns, and you know, when things were better there, I tried to be there. When I say there, I mean the U.S. When things were better in Paris, I tried to be here. So yeah, I felt very fortunate that I could sort of I could use the two sides of the Atlantic to my advantage.
You were born in the United States. I'm curious how Paris became, I don't know if this is your second home or if your primary home, but how did Paris become a home for you as well?
A relationship, simple as that. Met somebody who lived here, and then I was living in New York. And you know, the beauty in our field is that, at least for me as an instrumental soloist, is I can kind of live anywhere because work is always on the road. Of course, if you hold a teaching position or a music directorship somewhere, I mean that will kind of glue you down somewhere, but for me, I can be flexible where I live. So, and you know what? I never had a dream to live in Paris. I never imagined I'd live here. But it has become, I've been living a dream being here because it's been really a wonderful new addition to my life that was totally unexpected.
About this new recording, you have said that timing is everything. And it's been your response to the pandemic. You actually had a plan to do something completely different or fairly different. Can you talk a little bit about how you switched gears due to the pandemic and you ended up making this recording with this repertoire?
So originally I had planned to record 3 Beethoven sonatas in celebration of the 250th anniversary of the birth of Beethoven. And I was very excited about the project, though it, I must say at the same time, there were so many recordings coming out of Beethoven, and I thought, well, I don't want to get lost among all these Beethoven recordings. At the same time, there's many reasons we give recordings, and some of those reasons are very personal, you know. It's because the artist has something to say about those pieces at the time and wants to do it. And so it's for, and you learn so much through the process of recording. So I did have a plan to record those Beethoven sonatas. But then the pandemic hit, lockdown occurred, and concerts canceled. And that totally opened up my calendar. I thought, wow, all this Beethoven concertos and sonatas planned, that's all out the door. I don't have to practice them anymore. What should I play? Now, that was actually the first question was not what should I play? It was, should I even practice? Do I even want to practice? Because the whole thing was such a shock to all of us, you know, to everybody. What is going on? You know, everything is just stopping. Everything's shutting down. Where are we going? How bad is this going to be? And in all honesty, I did not even want to make music in the first weeks of lockdown. It was a scary time. I felt that I had other priorities. And then when it became clear that, you know, concerts would not be happening for quite a while, I asked myself, well, then what, how am I going to use this time? What am I going to practice? I don't have to play these big concertos. And frankly, it didn't really interest me to practice concerto repertoire knowing I wouldn't be performing them anytime soon. But even music that I typically play a lot, like Chopin, Liszt, and Rachmaninoff, none of this stormy repertoire appealed to me. None of this highly subjective, emotional, sensual music appealed to me. It felt irrelevant. I didn't want to sort of delve into the world of fantasy because we were dealing with such a real crisis. So when I went to the piano, I didn't really know what I'd play. And I had, you know, list of scores, a pile of scores on the piano. And I just sort of naturally pulled out a score of Bach. I said, you know what, this is music I don't play very often. Let's just see where it goes. And it turned out that this music immediately appealed to me. And it was surprising for me because I never viewed myself as a Bach pianist. I'm not somebody who is, in my professional life, has played any Bach. Of course, I've studied a lot of it. All of us have studied much of Bach. I've always had tremendous respect for it, but I never identified personally with the music as a performer. But at that moment, in this moment in time, the music absolutely appealed for so many different reasons, which I write about in the liner notes to the CD. And so eventually I came to making this recording because, again, recordings were one of the few things we could do during this very difficult year. And it just felt like the right music to be playing at this time and to be recording. I found it both timely and timeless.
So Bach's music is good for the brain and the fingers, and it also offers a sense of order, especially during a time of chaos. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
One of the immediate reasons it appealed is because of its clarity. This is some of the most rational music. And that clarity and that rationality gave me a kind of hope. There's a kind of gravitas in it saying that, okay, this music, there's a purity to it, and this music has certainly endured the test of time. And this music expresses a kind of universal emotion. It's a collective emotion. It's not about how the composer was feeling that day. It wasn't about his life. So I wasn't really interested in playing music that was just too personal in that way. I needed something that had a kind of a real gravitas and that seemed bigger than us, bigger than the instrument for which they were written, something that frankly had a kind of spiritual dimension to it. And because I think for me that gave me a kind of hope. None of us knew where things were going in terms of COVID as a health crisis, in terms of health, COVID as an economic crisis, and or in terms of COVID as a crisis for our industry. So we needed to cling to something, and I felt somehow more hope with Bach than any other composer.
Something else you said you discovered about Bach's music is that it wasn't written for and wasn't dependent on an audience. Silence rather than applause seems appropriate after these pieces are played. Why is that?
Well, this is true. I mean, we've always felt this about Bach, you know, prior to the pandemic. I mean, one of it is probably the fact that, you know, we can't deny that many of us heard Bach for the first time in church and church services, and where, you know, there is no applause after a performance of it. And of course, this music was written for so much of it for religious services. So I think that there's that element, but I think that it's not that he's writing music only for an audience that is not present. He's not expecting a kind of response. And this is very hard to describe, but I feel like if you play some of his preludes and fugues, this music is so internal. It's not necessarily about pleasing anybody. It's about something bigger than that. It's perhaps about Bach dedicated so many of his works, you know, to the glory of God. But it's bigger than, this is not entertainment. This is not music that naturally elicits a lot of applause. It's not music that's trying to be impressive.
Of Bach's many works for keyboard, how did you choose the ones that appear on this recording? Why were they the right ones for this project?
Again, because Bach was so new to me, I started to explore, and I was enjoying the sort of the newness of this discovery of his music. I decided for the recording to make it a completely fresh new album, in that not only am I recording Bach for the first time in my life, I'm recording a piece I've never performed before. I'm recording a piece that I learned during the pandemic, during lockdown. And it is a piece I'd always been fascinated by for a number of reasons. It's kind of an anomaly in his repertoire, the overture in the French style, because it is so French, in that Bach is trying to emulate the style of the composers of Louis XIV. This is music that has a kind of aura of Versailles in it. And other than the opening, the fugue in the first movement, this long, extensive Germanic Bachian fugue, the rest of the piece is very French. There's a kind of lightness to it. There's a quality that's, obviously, these are French Baroque dance movements, but you can appreciate them, you know, for the musical construct and the counterpoint, but they're just very pleasing to the ear. And I think I'd always found it a really beautiful piece, though I'd never really heard a recording of it I liked very much, which also, so that became a challenge for me. What can I do in my recording that will really make it come to life? And so I took on that challenge, and I felt that this is music that still to my ears is just so fresh. As I was playing it, I just remember I would practice it again and again and again, and I would say, and every time I would play it, I would find it so beautiful. I'd find that long fugue just almost hypnotic. And I'd find every movement, it gave me a kind of life playing it. And the fact that I didn't get tired of it, and I practiced it so much, I think that if my recording of it, you know, resonates with people, I'd like to think, just frankly, that that would have to do with the fact that it was so new for me, that I had a fresh perspective, and it was just the love and the discovery of this music for the first time.
Just like a lot of listeners, I love that. Of the 8 movements of this overture in the French style by Bach, is there one that you always look forward to playing?
I think the echo, the very last movement. Again, because it conjures this Versailles aura that is so unique. It doesn't sound like any other piece Bach wrote to my ears. It was, of course, written for harpsichord, and it's called Echo because he indicates where he wants certain phrases to be in the upper register, the louder register of the harpsichord, and others on the lower, quieter register. So I think that somehow that movement is the one that excites me the most. Also because there's just such a wonderful life to it. It's jovial, but it's in a minor key. It's in B minor, but it has this sort of jovial quality that just makes you kind of want to dance. And the whole piece is magical, but I think that that movement resonates with listeners probably more than any other.
One of the things you said about this project and your perspective on it is that it became less about me, meaning you, and more about the collective we. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by that?
So on this recording, there's music of Bach and Beethoven. I've always felt that when I play this music of both composers, that I'm expressing sort of a kind of collective emotion in mankind. It's not about me. It's not about just the composer in that moment. It's not trying to capture something that is so, in any of the music of Beethoven or of the or of Bach, something that is just really fleeting and just only specific for that time and place. This is music that is timeless, and it is music that I feel, the reason why Bach and Beethoven are considered these sort of pillars in the history of Western music is because, and why they're considered such powerful composers, is because they endure even poor performances of their music. They endure even they endure something bigger than the performers or the performances that are playing their music. And I think that this kind of universality in the music, and it's not so easy for me to describe, but it gave me it was a kind of therapeutic thing to sort of be involved with this music at a time when we just didn't know where things were going.
Originally, this project was going to be all about Beethoven, and you still chose to include Beethoven in this recording, and you did that really intentionally during the second wave of the pandemic. Can you talk about that and how you chose these sonatas?
So when lockdown occurred and my Beethoven concerts got canceled, I found a kind of solace in the music of Bach. And that's all I wanted to play for a while. And then eventually, second wave, we could say, I came back to Beethoven. And I felt that I could approach Beethoven with a new clarity. And I was in sort of riding this wave of inspiration from Bach. And of course, Beethoven was influenced so much by Bach and all the counterpoint and all that. And I just sort of took some of the Bach clarity and brought that to the Beethoven. And the Beethoven was really nice at that time, the second wave, because it was a chance to sort of unleash everything. And when, particularly, you know, in a sonata like the Appassionata, which I include on the program, I felt I really needed to sort of unleash all that energy that had been contained in lockdown. You know, where we couldn't move, where we couldn't travel, where we couldn't perform. Like, I just felt I really wanted an outlet for all of that energy. And I don't think there's a better outlet than the Beethoven Appassionata.
As you began to dive into Beethoven's Appassionata Sonata, I'm curious if you approached it any differently than you had prior to the pandemic.
Well, I think I approached all music differently. And that is because for us musicians, the absence of concerts truly made us appreciate what we do more than ever. And I think many of my colleagues would say the same thing, that now, just to do a concert anywhere, whether it's Carnegie Hall or whether it's in a small town, just to get on stage again and make music is such a joyful experience. People aren't jaded anymore. People are not burnt out. And so I think with a piece that's a very good example, like the Appassionata Sonata, it's not a piece that typically I would just be dying to perform. Why? Because I played it so many times, because I've heard it so many times. But because of the circumstances of being in lockdown and not being able to give concerts, and because when I came back into playing Beethoven, having taken a break from it for so long, I think I just had a fresh vision for it. And I had an energy and an appetite to play it. And I think for sure that having played all that Bach before, I brought that kind of clarity into the Beethoven that I may not have had I not had spend all that time playing Bach.
Andrew, you chose to end this disc quietly with two of Bach's works arranged by a German pianist that you highly admire, Wilhelm Kempf. What do you most appreciate about these two pieces and the way he arranged them?
These two pieces contain just gorgeous melodies. They're quite familiar to most listeners, the Largo from the Harpsichord Concerto and the Siciliano, which comes from the flute sonata, one of the flute sonatas. And I think it's the melodies that steal the show. I mean, what Kempf does with it is beautiful because he adds octaves and he writes them well, sort of for the resonance of the modern piano, but he doesn't change much. These are hypnotic works. They are contemplative, beautiful, quiet works. And I did feel I wanted to end the disc quietly because, in the kind of contemplative spirit, because that seemed to somehow capture the mood that I had been in most of the time in the past year.
The healing music of Bach and Beethoven with pianist Andrew von Oyen. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for this show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. And since you're clearly a music fan, there's another podcast you might want to check out. It's called the Piano Puzzler Podcast, where every week host Fred Child invites composer Bruce Adolf into the studio, and he plays one of his brilliant musical mind games. Bruce takes a familiar tune and disguises it in the style of a classical composer. Then a contestant calls in and tries to solve the riddle. If you're up for the challenge, subscribe to the Piano Puzzler wherever you get your podcasts. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with thanks to Valerie Kaler, our producer. I'm Julie Amacher.